Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by the toe. If he hollers, let him go. Jews did it first. It's Rabbi Yossi. Glad to be back. I know it's been a while since the last one, but not too long. I'm trying to get these out a little more often, but I just wanted to implore you, if you're listening, please go to jewishoswego.org/donate and please help make a donation to make sure I can be able to keep taking the time out to do these. I think they're interesting. They're historically relevant, culturally relevant, and all that good stuff. So with that said, I want to continue in our quest here of what things Jews did first. And this one caught my attention. I want to be upfront. It's not an exact Jews did it first. And you'll see why as we go. But I do want to, right off the bat, dispel this ridiculous myth that goes around that eeny, meeny, miny, mo is somehow embedded in racism and white supremacy and so on. Now, it is true that in the 1800s, there was a use of it that was racist. It was eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and we say, catch a tiger by the toe, if he hollers, let him go. So they would say, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a N-word by the toe. Now, this was clearly an adaptation from the rhyme and not the origin of the rhyme. So it's just ridiculous to say that it's somehow racist in nature. Not that it wasn't used for racist purposes, but that to say it's racist in nature is quite silly, in my opinion. And especially because we actually see the eeny, meeny, miny, mo rhyme throughout several different cultures and languages, which I found quite interesting when I was looking this up. In fact, in America, even, it wasn't eeny, meeny, miny, mo. There used to be this rhyme. It was, in fact, this is recorded from New York City, with children saying, Hannah, man, Mona, Mike, Barcelona, Bona, strike. Hair, wear, frown, vanak, hariko, wariko, wewo, whack. Okay, so in each language that these rhymes are done in have sort of nonsense syllables and so on. And there's a man named Harry Carrington Bolton who discovered this version to be in the U.S., Ireland, and Scotland in the 1880s, but was unknown in England until later in the century. Now, there's also a similar German rhyme, which was "Ene tene mone me, pastor lone bone stray, ene funa herke berke, ver vi vo vas." So that's very similar to the one that was in New York, that's recorded in English, quote unquote, New York City, which I found very interesting. And there's a Scottish one, and other ones as well. One thing that I thought was really interesting was a Cornish version from 1882. And the reason I found the Cornish one interesting was because it goes, "Ene mene mona mite, baskalora bora bite." And that was very similar to that English one of "Hannah mene mona mike, Barcelona bona strike." I thought that was quite interesting. Some of these have a lot of similarities. And then, of course, it ends, you know, there's a famous English one that ends, "Pig snout, you're out." That's how it ends, how you pick the person who's out. And then you had in the Cornish one ends, "Eggs, butter, cheese, bread, stick, stock, stone dead, out." And other such things. And again, there's all these other ones that are in, you know, various languages. I don't really want to say them because I'm probably going to completely butcher how it's said. And I don't think that's very helpful. But a lot of these you could look up. And they're just, it's just very strange to see the different variations. There's also "catch a piggy by the toe." There were ones that were made sort of during World War II to make fun of the Japanese and so on. And all sorts of things like that. So I just felt that it was it's necessary to recognize there's a Latin American version, there's a Dutch version, New Zealand, all these different things. So I certainly felt to say that it's racist in nature. There was, I guess, this famous court case against, I think it was American Airlines, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was Southwest, or one of the flight attendants had said, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, pick your seat and let's go, or something along those lines, which was, you know, obviously meant just in jest. And apparently there were some African-American passengers, and they tried to sue the airline because they were being racist and insensitive. Luckily, they did not win such a frivolous lawsuit. But so I just wanted to get that off the bat. So in case anyone says, oh, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, why are you doing that? That's racist and blah, blah, blah. No, no, it's not. So be quiet, please. Thank you. With that said, where do you see such a thing in Judaism? Well, I don't want to say that we have the rhyming thing going, because that's not necessarily true. My point with the eeny, meeny, miny, mo was sort of this random selection process that we have, right? The whole point of eeny, meeny, miny, mo is to say, you know, sort of go through a crowd randomly, pointing to each individual person, because that's how you know who you're talking about, right? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch it with your finger going each time. And then the person you land on, he's out. And this, we will see, Jews did it first. So here's the story. You have, in the temple, was a lot of things to be done. There were a lot of things to be done in the temple, a lot of services, a lot of sacrifices, a lot of libations to be poured on the altar, all sorts of various goings on. And the Kohanim, the priests, were very excited to do these jobs. In fact, there were divisions. There were 24 divisions, and each person had a week. Each division, and they were organized roughly by families. Each division had a week, and during that week, they would do the service in the temple. So each family only had about, you know, if they were lucky, twice during the year that they would get to go and serve in the temple. And of course, during holidays, there were certain arrangements made for more than just one family to do, and so on. But they had very few opportunities during the year to serve in the temple. And so now they've got this opportunity to do their job in the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, and they're very excited about it. So they were all vying for particular jobs, and in fact, there is one story in particular that happens where they were kind of the way that it was used to be done is that, you know, first come, first serve. If you got to the job first, you get to do it. And so there's a story that's told that they were, this is in the Mishnah or the Talmud in Yoma, which is a tractate of the Mishnah, Yoma chapter 2. And they would go along and try and race to the job. And so you had a situation once where one of the priests was going up, running, you know, a few of the priests, sorry, were going up, running up the ramp to the Mizbeach, to the altar. And another priest, who was a little overzealous, starts, they think it's, you know, Pac-10 over here, and they're shoving people aside, or it's some kind of like hockey game where you're body checking. And one guy ends up falling off the ramp, getting knocked off of the ramp, and breaks his leg. This obviously had to be put to an end, because it's bad enough that you're running and trying to compete and push people out of the way and shove people out of the way in the Holy Temple itself. But then when someone gets seriously injured, obviously this needs to be put to a stop. So what did they surmise? Well, they actually surmised a version of eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Now, it wasn't with a rhyme, but it was with numbers. And so what would happen is, it says in the Mishnah, in Yoma chapter 2, the first Mishnah, it says that the assigner of the tasks would tell all of them, stick out your fingers. And what would they stick out? Either one or two fingers. And they wouldn't stick out their thumb, because the thumb It says it's improper to stick out the thumb in the temple. Now, the thumb's kind of cheating because you could argue that, well, I was counting it. I wasn't counting it. You know, if it landed on you, if it landed on the next guy, you say, no, but I was holding out my thumb, so you should have counted that as well. Or if it didn't, so you could say, oh, I wasn't really holding out my thumb. Sorry, you counted that. It didn't work. So it's a little too cheap because your thumb's short, much shorter than your other finger. So they hold out one or two fingers, however they want. And then what would happen is they would pick a random number. Yeah, totally random. Let's say they pick the number 80. And then they'd start at a random place in that circle of Kohanim, of priests. They would all stand in a circle holding out these one or two fingers. And then they start counting people in the line until they reach the particular number, counting the fingers. Now, you're not allowed to be counted in Judaism. We don't count people. In fact, there's a famous story of King David. In 1 Chronicles 21, King David takes a census of the people. And it turns out that, I think it's also mentioned in 2 Samuel 24, he takes a census of the people, and he is severely punished for it. What happens there's a plague or something like this, I think is what happens. And people die, and it's a really terrible thing, and they realize it's because of the census. So historically in Judaism, we do not count people. In fact, even when Moses is counting the people in the desert, it says that he collected a certain tax from the people, and that's what he counted. He counted one amount, one sum of money per head. And so that's how you would count the people, because we don't count people in Judaism. It's seen as ayin hara, as bad luck, as not a good thing spiritually. To count the individuals. And we could go on about that, but it's not really the point of this thing. So you don't count the people. Obviously, you count the fingers. And so you go around counting until you reach that number. And then whoever he landed on, that's the person that would get the particular job. And then that person, each person was counted once, and then the next person in line was counted going around whatever many times for that number that's being reached, and so on and so forth until all the jobs were doled out. And by the way, this is based on sort of the Bar Tanura, an explanation on the Mishnah. It's just kind of going through what he says. So like I said, he might kind of trick the supervisor into counting him twice and get selected by holding out his thumb and his index finger so that he gets counted twice instead of once. In order to prevent that sort of thing, there was a blanket rule, don't use the thumb. It was only a concern regarding the index finger and thumb due to the distance between them and not any other two non-thumb fingers, okay? Because obviously they're clear, but there's distance. I'm not sure exactly how this would go on, how it would work in the particulars, but that's the main gist. And so you basically have them, instead of saying eeny, meeny, miny, moe, they're saying one, two, three, four, and then counting. And then, interestingly enough, then it was that person who would get the job. So here we see that we have a clear example of a sort of eeny, meeny, miny, moe version going on that shows us Jews did it first. So the whole point of the eeny, meeny, miny, moe thing is this idea of like a lottery, some sort of random chance where you're picked or you're out or something along those lines. And here, we could say that there is a very deep meaning behind this in Jewish thought. Now, in our sort of secular concept of this, we think of it as a very, you know, it's random chance, and it's a way to, you don't have to think about it, you don't have to, it's not too deep, it's just, you know, you need something, you need to do it quick, so you just, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, get rid of it, figure out something, because you can't make the choice. But in Jewish thought, the concept of a lottery and random chance is actually much deeper. And we can see this in two specific examples that are mentioned in the Bible itself. One is the story of Purim. And the story of Purim is the Book of Esther. Purim is the holiday that it's centered around nowadays. And Purim means lots. A pur in ancient Aramaic, I believe it was Aramaic, a pur was a lot or a lottery. And what happened? Haman, he draws a lottery in order to decide when is going to be a good time to annihilate the Jewish people. And he does this in a way of, he casts lots for a date, for a month, and I think it's a month, and I think also the day. And he lands on the month of Adar, the Jewish month of Adar, which is, he feels, is a good time because Moses died during the month of Adar, and it says that what he didn't realize was Moses was also born in the month of Adar, and so that was really a good time and a happy time, and so it didn't work out for him. And so we see he's trying to connect. Why does he cast lots? What's the whole point? I mean, it just seems silly, you know. The whole point is not that he just needs to pick a day and so pick one. It's expressing to the idea that the concept of this randomness, of this lottery, isn't just something that is random and pointless, but that actually has specific meaning. It connects to something that's higher, that's beyond intellect. And we see this even more pronounced in the lottery that's mentioned in Numbers chapter 25, I think it is. I want to say chapter 25. Where the lots are cast for the Jewish tribes, for the tribes of Israel, that they're supposed to get apportioned the land in Israel, right? They get land, and how do they do this? They do it through lots, right? They write a name on a piece of paper, and they write an area of land on a piece of paper. And then you have, oh, sorry, I apologize, Numbers 26, just Numbers 26, verses 55 and 56. They write the names of the tribe on the piece of paper, then they write the name of the land on the piece of paper, and they pick out, okay, this land, this tribe, it's a match. Now, something that's interesting that happens is it doesn't just say that they took these lots. It actually repeats it, and it says something very interesting. It says, "Ach b'goyer yichalik," that it'll be through a lottery to apportion the land. But then, in the very next verse, in 56, it says, "Al pi hagoyer," which also means through a lottery. But "al pi" literally means by the mouth or on the mouth. And so the Midrash explains why this repetition and the change in language, because the lottery ticket itself spoke out and pronounced who was getting which portion of land. So there was a miracle that occurred. Both of these stories show us, especially this one, that we have a connection to God that isn't just rational. It's beyond reason. And when we're using reason and logic and trying to figure out ways, right? For instance, you're trying to pick something, you're trying to do something, you're using your rational mind, that can only take you so far because we are created beings, and so we can only reach that which we have within us, right? So if we're only using a finite intellect to understand something, so then we're only going to reach that finite understanding. Even it might be very deep and very high and so on and so forth, but it's only going to be so far. The concept of a lottery is to say, this is not going to be determined through rational thought. This is not going to be determined by my limited vessel of a brain. And so therefore, there's a lottery, in order to go beyond what we're capable of, to reach higher than intellect. Even though we think of a lottery as maybe lower than intellect, the truth is when you're dealing with holiness, it's the exact opposite. It's beyond. It's higher. And so that's why Haman in the Purim story has to go to the lottery because he wants to effect a bad thing to the Jewish people who are connected to God, right? So according to reason and logic, we're God's people. That's not going to work. You have to reach beyond that. You have to reach up in the spiritual realms that go beyond any logical reason for God to be connected to the Jewish people in a positive way, right? Because we're his chosen people and so forth. And this actually extends also to the concept of being the chosen people themselves. It's explained in Kabbalah, in Hasidic philosophy, that God chose us. Right? What does that mean? Right? When you have a choice, if you have a choice between, let's say, chocolate and vanilla ice cream, and it turns out, you know, chocolate, it's a little bit more bitter, it's not really your favorite, but vanilla, oh, geschmack, you love vanilla, it's wonderful. So you're not really making the choice to choose vanilla, because you have a logical, rational reason to choose vanilla over chocolate. You like vanilla more than chocolate. Hey, red wine versus white wine, whatever it happens to be. But let's say that you have two cans of Coca-Cola next to you. They're the exact same kind of cans. They're from the same package. It's the same Coke. And you're deciding, which one of these cans will I take? And you pick one versus the other. When you have two things that are absolutely identical, then you choose one of them, that's a choice. That's a real choice, because now you're exercising. You could literally take either one, and yet you're choosing one versus the other. And so when God chose the Jewish people, he chose, if you say that he chose the Jewish people because, well, we're his firstborn child, and we did mitzvahs, we kept a certain code of conduct that was taught to us from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob all the way through Egypt. And so he chose us and took us out of Egypt because of that. That's not a choice. That's not choosing us. Or go back further, Jacob versus Esau, his brother, right? They're twins. They're fraternal twins. And he chooses Jacob over Esau. Why? We read in the Torah how awful a person Esau is. And how great a person Jacob is. He's learning and he's the good son and he's so great. So how is that a choice that he chooses Jacob over Esau? The truth is that there's a spiritual level that you go high enough into the essence of God and there is no difference between Esau and Jacob. Nevertheless, God chooses Jacob. So when we say we're the chosen people, the Jewish people are the chosen nation of God, not because of something we did, not because of some intrinsic quality that we have, but rather God is choosing us on a level where there is no difference. He chose us simply because he chose us. He didn't choose us because we are special. We are special because he chose us. And so we try the best we can to connect to that level of godliness that is beyond intellect, beyond reason. And that is perhaps a deeper lesson of eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate your support. And please, if you would like to help keep these podcasts coming, and hopefully they can actually be done a little more often, if there could be some support, go to jewishoswego.org/Jews Did It First. Click on the donate button and really love to also get your input. rabbi@jewishoswego.org. Please, if there's a topic that you feel maybe you think Jews did it first or you're not sure, you want me to investigate, I'm happy to do it for you. So drop me a line or on the Facebook page, Jews Did It First, there as well. All the best. Shabbat Shalom.